bringing you the truth behind the news. Welcome to the New American.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Paul Dragoo. We're glad you've joined us. The Supreme Court recently heard arguments in a case with massive implications for free speech. We're going to look at that in a bit. Also, Wisconsin State Representative Ty Bond joins us to discuss what's happening on the election and redistricting front in one of the most politically significant states. We have all that coming up. But first, Peter Navarro is now in prison. He is a former high-ranking Trump White House official. And he is the first ever former official of any presidential administration sent to prison on contempt of Congress charges. Here's what he said just before being locked up yesterday.
I am the first senior White House advisor in the history of our republic that has ever been charged with this alleged crime. And I say alleged because for hundreds of years, this has not been a crime, and for 50 years, the Department of Justice has maintained the principle of absolute testimonial immunity. And it was only with my case that somehow that has changed. And here's where the homework is, because the big constitutional separation of powers are these. Can Congress compel a senior White House advisor, what they call the alter ego of a president, to testify before Congress? And executive privilege goes back to George Washington and his remarks to the Congress regarding the Jay Treaty. And he said very simply and clearly, succinctly, elegantly, that to write to the Congress, he said, I cannot command you, as members of Congress, to come to me. You cannot command me to come to you.
It should come as no surprise that Navarro has been very vocal about the stolen 2020 election. He's also criticized so-called free trade agreements like the TPP and NAFTA. And it just so happens that as director of the White House Office for Trade and Manufacturing Policy under Trump, he was a major player in the tariffs leveled against China. His imprisonment marks yet another Biden regime low, and it breaks a long tradition of not imprisoning executive branch officials held in contempt of Congress. During the Obama years, former Attorney General Eric Holder and Lois Lerner, who was an IRS official, were never prosecuted, let alone sent to jail, for their defiance of congressional authority. But we're in the middle of an attempted coup, and the old rules don't apply anymore. The deep state is behind the wheel now, and it's determined to hold on to its power. Navarro's four-month prison sentence, like the lawfare against Trump and his supporters, is designed to deter and crush anyone who opposes the revolutionary takeover of our country. And the purges have probably just begun. Next up is former Trump aide Steve Bannon, who's also been convicted of contempt of Congress and was sentenced to 4 months in prison. Bannon, for the time being, is free, while his appeal is working its way to probably the same outcome as Navarro's. Meanwhile, in Michigan, on Monday, federal agents arrested attorney Stephanie Lambert after a court hearing during which she gave law enforcement officials what she called evidence of numerous crimes related to election machines. Her evidence is based on internal emails she took from Dominion Voting Systems. Her alleged crimes have to do with the most forbidden of all topics, the 2020 stolen election, an event that has turned our country into the banana republic we are living in now. Lambert is technically charged with illegally breaching voting machines and making those private communications public. How dare she? She recently tweeted, "I gave the evidence to law enforcement. The discovery from Dominion contained evidence of numerous crimes. The Constitution does not permit secret Serbians to run our elections. Local clerks are to run our elections, and transparency is prevented by vendors." She meant Dominion. She was attending a court hearing for a defamation case involving Patrick Byrne, who she represents. Byrne, the former CEO of Overstock, is being sued by Dominion over his claims of election fraud. So joining me to discuss today's stories is Executive Senior Editor of The New American, Steve Bonta. Hey, Steve Bonta.
Namaste, Paul. How are you?
Oh, my Lord, what times we are living in. I have a very optimistic look at this, but I'm going to let you go first, and then I'll tell you my take.
Well, I mean, what we're you know, they say you reap what you sow. This is really the law of the harvest playing out before our eyes. We have conducted this long-term dalliance with old-world socialism and Marxism and all these other isms that are fundamentally and implacably hostile to the system that our founders set up on this, the new world, where it tried to make a clean break with the old. And now we're surprised that after really several generations of this stuff, that our country is starting to look like an old world despotism.
Yeah. What I mean, some would argue that what we're seeing now is a result of the systems having been captured. We have this bureaucracy that is unaccountable to the people. You know, it's like, what are we to do with that? Socialism or not? How can we hold a bureaucracy that we don't elect accountable? How can we hold FBI agents, CIA officials accountable? We don't vote them in. So where does the socialism come in on that? Or what is the Republican stance on doing away with the corruption that comes from that?
Well, I mean, obviously that would be a huge part. An enormous part of this is the existence of the what we call the deep state,
right?
Which is really this sprawling,
they took power,
unelected, you know, fourth branch of the government,
right?
Leviathan, which can act essentially without any accountability to the people, either directly or indirectly. Okay, so I mean, the defining feature of the deep state is that it does not change from one electoral cycle
exactly to
another. So even as judges are appointed and retire, even as presidents come and go, political parties, you know, the fortunes of the parties rise and fall, ebb and flow. Partisan control of the two houses of Congress changes hands from time to time. The deep state remains
that,
the same.
Right.
Yeah, and its agenda correspondingly stays the same as well. And its agenda, first and foremost, is the maintenance of the status quo, which means securing and preserving forever and ever, amen, its grip on power.
Right.
Okay, now, I mean, that may sound very conspiratorial, and to a degree it is. It's part conspiracy. It's part out just plain venality of these people who see themselves have been corrupted by the unaccountable power that they possess.
Mm-hmm.
They see themselves as not beholden to the same laws as the rest of us. For example, there ain't no job security in the world like the job security enjoyed by even the most menial and incompetent of federal employees.
Right.
It is well nigh impossible to fire them. They have...
And Trump tried.
Command the world's highest salaries, but it's more than compensated for by the lavish benefits, their insurance policies, their retirement,
the security, job security,
all the jobs, all the rest of us, most of the rest of us can really dream of.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as you were about to say, you know, Trump obviously tried to make a dent in that, only to discover, boy, you try to fire them, you try to defund their departments,
yeah,
and they immediately turn to the court system,
yeah,
where they're invariably command sympathetic ears in the judiciary, you know, when they invoke, oh, you're taking away my rights. And of course, every time they try to, they defund or shut down the government, even temporarily, yeah, they get furloughed.
Yeah.
That's called being laid off or fired for the rest of us in the private sector. They get furloughed, which means
they get back pay.
They don't have to work, and then they come back and get back pay with bonus super added onto it, and it's worse than before. It's an obscenity.
Yeah.
But again, it shouldn't surprise us. We're reaping now what we've been sowing for decades.
But,
and this same sort of bureaucratic absolutism is a characteristic feature of all the old world isms, socialism, communism, even old-fashioned monarchy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm from Eastern Europe, and although I didn't grow up there, I mean, I spent the first 8 years of my life there, and I heard lots of conversations, and I got a feel of how things work. As most people know, it's very corrupt there. But, you know, going along with what you say, one of the things that people aspire to was to get a government job.
Right.
Because a government job in a corrupt nation is secure. You get to have power. You get to, you know, you can be bribed. You
oh,
can
sure.
get deals and favors for your family.
Yeah,
that kind of sounds like where we're now.
Oh, yeah,
it?
I mean, so in old Russia, they had this term, you know, kanselyerskaya krysa, which means a chancellery rat. Somebody who just, that's their going. Or in China, tiefanwan. Tiefanwan means iron rice bowl. And this is the ultimate, this is a government job, the most coveted possible thing
right.
you can have, even today, in supposedly reform China, okay, because it has that guaranteed security.
All right. We're going to continue this conversation after this, and we're also going to look at a Supreme Court case that could determine how much pressure, if not, if any at all, the government can put on social media companies.
The John Birch Society has been working tirelessly since 1958 to preserve freedom, safeguard the Constitution, and restore our God-given rights. We continually educate voters and lead the freedom movement. Join us as we work against a tyrannical one-world government. United as one, we can defeat this conspiracy against a free America. JBS founder Robert Welch said, "Education is our total strategy and truth our only weapon." Join us in restoring this great nation.
All right, we're back, folks. Steve, I wanted to put out one more thought before you can chime in and we go into the next story. And that is, I think the silver lining to what we're seeing now is I think we're seeing a, you know, we talked about the deep state, and I think it's desperate. I think the people in power are desperate, and I think the cat is way out of the bag. When you talk about election, a stolen election, more people today believe that the election was stolen than they did in 2021, 2022. The polls show that. Also, the uptake in COVID injections, which we're going to, our next story is going to be an element of, it's like between 5% and 8%, okay? And in Canada, it's like 15%. And over there, they got way more propaganda. I think we're heading towards something. There's a convergence of something. We're not sure what's on the other end, but I don't think we're going to continue. We can continue in this way. But I think the good news is that the public opinion, we've won the public opinion battle. I mean, you go online, and if they were to censor everyone now who believes the 2020 election was stolen or believes that the COVID injection is harmful, they'd have no one there. And it's like Facebook doesn't censor them anymore. They'll take your post off or whatever. But I don't think there's not going to be enough jail cells to throw everyone who believes the 2020 election was stolen or the COVID injection is harmful or enough FBI agents to elect anyone. So I think it's just a matter of time before there is a massive change. It's just a matter of what's on the other side.
Well, I will just say this in accord with my usual cautionary approach, and that is there's nothing so dangerous as a wounded animal. And that's really
true.
What any hunter or fisherman or trapper can tell you that.
Yeah.
And so this is what we're dealing with. You know, we have, you know, the animal's wounded. We might say it's even caught in a leg trap, but
putting it down
is going to be a different order. It's definitely not dead. And if it gets half a chance, it will tear your throat out.
Yeah, I wonder how that applies, because it's like, you know, you're not supposed to get real close. You're supposed to put it out from a distance. I don't know if there's, and we're not talking about.
Well, yeah, exactly. With the
right,
analogy,
right. Usually what anyway. I do with the deer is I poke it in the eye and make sure,
right, sure.
That it's that. But I think that's definitely something that we should be happy about, because a lot of the stuff is pretty grim that we talk. I mean, we got J6ers, hundreds sitting in prison. We got stolen elections. I talked to Dr. Clements. And of course, this is the guy they're at. You know, they got these guys, they got Navarro, they might get Bannon, but this is the guy they're after, right?
And, you know, they're getting closer. I mean, at the moment, Trump's fortunes have taken a downturn in the courts, even as he continues to rack up electoral wins, which we'll probably talk about soon.
Yeah, you know? So, all right. Well, we're going to move to our next story. Listen to this.
Government censorship has no place in our democracy. That is why this 20,000-page record is stunning. As the Fifth Circuit put it, the record reveals unrelenting pressure by the government to coerce social media platforms to suppress the speech of millions of Americans. The district court, which analyzed this record for a year, described it as arguably the most massive attack against free speech in American history, including the censorship of renowned scientists opining in their areas of expertise. And the government's levers of pressure are anathema to the First Amendment. Behind closed doors, the government badgers the platforms 24/7. It abuses them with profanity. It warns that the highest levels of the White House are concerned. It ominously says that the White House is considering its options. And it accuses platforms both of playing total Calvin ball and of hiding the ball, all to get the platforms to censor more speech. Under this onslaught, the platforms routinely cave. Now, last month in the NetChoice cases, the platforms told you that it's incredibly important that they create their own content moderation policies. But this record shows that they continually depart from those policies because of unrelenting government pressure. Indeed, as Facebook recently disclosed in an internal email to former UK Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg, the reason Facebook did that was, quote, because we were under pressure by the administration. We shouldn't have done it. Now, my friend says all this is constitutional because the government has the right to persuade using the bully pulpit. But the government has no right to persuade platforms to violate Americans' constitutional rights. And pressuring platforms in back rooms shielded from public view is not using the bully pulpit at all. That's just being a bully.
That was the Solicitor General of Louisiana giving his opening statement Monday before the Supreme Court. Murthy versus Missouri is being hailed as one of the most important free speech cases. The lawsuit was filed by the Attorneys General of Missouri and Louisiana. They're representing doctors and media members who were censored by Biden regime officials who didn't want any dissenting ideas about COVID injections and the stolen 2020 election making their way around the internet. Among the evidence being considered were emails of government officials routinely cussing out people on the other end as they told them to censor posts they claimed violated the platform's terms. Nevertheless, Justice Department lawyer Brian Fletcher argued that the government did nothing wrong because its suggestions did not include a threat of adverse reactions. Fletcher claimed that no one was injured and that the platforms weren't coerced. Moreover, he said the platforms wanted to do their part in putting out good information, and they even routinely said no. When they said no, the president then took to the bully pulpit.
I'm saying that when the government persuades a private party not to distribute or promote someone else's speech, that's not censorship. That's persuading a private party to do something that they're lawfully entitled to do. And there are lots of contexts where government officials can persuade private parties to do things that the officials couldn't do directly.
This is a case that's been heard by two lower courts, both of which have sided with the states. But the Supreme Court blocked those rulings while it considers the issue, and many believe that Monday's arguments signaled that the Supremes will side with the government. However, Justice Samuel Alito did point out that the Supreme Court doesn't usually reverse multiple lower court rulings. But the soundbite that has gotten the most attention has been this one from Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, and for good reason. Listen.
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. What would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country. And you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information.
All right, Steve. So the government has a duty to protect us. Justice Brown misunderstand something?
Well, I would just say, I don't think she blinked once in that entire time. That was amazing. Nor did she move. I admire that.
Still, knock it off.
So my ADHD soul just looks at that and says, wow. But no, again, in all seriousness, my first reaction to this is so now the standard has been raised from there's a difference between persuasion and coercion.
Right.
And unless the government is flat out coercing people, i.e. at gunpoint or in manacles, to do something or not, as the case mm-hmm. may be, or to say something or not, anything short of that is perfectly okay. So it's kind of like, if I'm the local mafia boss and I come into your store completely unarmed and I say to you, it would be a good idea if you started paying up your, but I'm not, this is just a friendly talk.
We don't know what's going to happen.
You really should consider making those payments right, so that my boys can make sure that your business operates smoothly. But I don't point a gun at you. I don't twist your arm.
You don't punch him in the gut.
Absolutely. Right. So this is what's going on here. And it's again, one of these areas. And by the way, the comment that was made early on that censorship has no place in our democracy, I think was the first line. And I thought to myself, oh, brother, actually, it's as American as apple pie. We've been censoring each other since the very get-go, starting with the Alien and Sedition Act, mm-hmm. which, of course, was eventually struck down. It's now looked on as a stain on our national honor. Way back in the time of President John Adams, World War I was another particularly pernicious era when, journalists were rounded up and jailed by good old Woodrow Wilson, and so forth and so on. So this is not a new thing by any means, the impulse to censor and muzzle your enemies, either coercively or by, shall we say, persuasion in its various forms, is as old as the Republic itself.
Well, you're a linguist by trade. And so what is, I mean, I guess you just made your point.
Not that anymore, being that, just by training.
Okay, by training. But that was, I mean, what they did, it sounded, I mean, if they're cussing out, if you have the government coming at you and cussing out, we're going to have to continue this on the other side. But that's what was happening. And Justice Alito said that too, is it's like, if they're doing that, how is that not coercion? We're going to be back and Steve's going to answer that question.
Sophia paused before the door. It read, Department of Bi-Digital Convergence. Just inside was a new world, a better world, the one of everlasting life, of no pain, of no loss, of no problem. She entered the chamber and her surroundings changed. She saw around her an infinite field of waving golden grain surmounted by cloudless blue sky. The AI voice whispered gently in her mind, Welcome to the singularity. She couldn't see it and couldn't feel it. But her body had almost instantly been covered by a swarm of tiny gray multi-legged bots that melted through her clothes and into her skin. Not perceiving the nightmare, her eyes had already been consumed and the rest of her body was dissolving as the bots digested her flesh. She felt only a warmth suffusing her being. Drowsy, she drifted to sleep, and her last thought was one of panic. Would she ever wake? Could a nightmare vision like this be an outcome of the much-hyped transhumanist technological singularity? Enter the world of the future as illuminated by the experience of the past in Endgame, the new book by Dennis Barrett, the publisher of The New American Magazine, and find out how the disastrous COVID pandemic response fits with the technocratic elite's thirst to create a transhumanist utopia. Get Endgame from shopjbs.org with free shipping with code ENDSHIP, ENDSHIP. Or get Endgame and the Great Reset Collector's Issue of The New American Magazine and get free shipping plus an additional 20% off both with code END20, END20.
And we're back, folks. So, again, how is that not coercion when the government is bullying? What does it take? Like you said, is that what it takes? It takes a, you know, like you say, an adverse effect. So the government had to say, if you do not do this, we're going to punish you. I think that's the stance they're taking. The government is anyway.
Well, or maybe not even saying that. Maybe saying, you know, we really, really, really strongly feel that you should do this. Hint, hint, if you don't, the IRS may pay you a visit or something like that, right? I mean, but that's not coercion, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
We're just having a friendly conversation. The problem, again, goes back to what we harp on a lot in this show, which is the moral and intellectual degradation of our body politic, that people can't perceive plainly that this is what's going on. So this is once again, you know, would be tyrants, autocrats, and gauleiters taking advantage of all of the considerable gray areas in the law and saying, oh, well, yeah, and pushing as far as they can get away with.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's in that sense, it's of a piece with the legal persecution of Trump. Oh, no, this isn't anything new. It's not bad. You know, nobody's above the law and all the usual things. Well, this is kind of the same thing, you know. Well, this isn't really censorship. It's just, we just talk to them. You know, well, I don't know about you, but I haven't received any phone calls from federal government officials lately. If I did, you know, I wouldn't want to talk to them. I mean, they have this expression in China, he cha, which means to drink tea. And this is one of the ways by which the Communist Party, the officials, exact compliance. They don't necessarily come and round you up and beat your door down at middle life. They do that too. But a lot of times you'll get notified if you make a, you know, a controversial post on WeChat or Weibo or something like that. You'll get a call or even a visit from the local police, and they'll come by and they'll say, we'd like you to come over and drink tea with us at the police station. And everybody in China knows what that means. You go over and they manacle you in place and you drink tea with them. And then they explain to you why you need to stop doing what you're doing. You know, so there's always this tendency for the government to try to play the nice guy. You know, this idea that all tyranny, all autocracy is in the form of the sort of Hollywood extremes, you know, people being imprisoned and whipped and beaten and shot and evil tyrants that chuckle over their evil. I mean, you know, that's not really the way most tyrants behave.
But they weren't even playing nice. I mean, like one of the justices, and I don't know if it was Alito or another one, they pointed out, it's like, they're like cussing them out. That's like how...
Not coercion, Paul.
No.
Coercion is when I point a gun at you.
Or
make you do the perp walk or something, you know, overt like that. That at least is the faux reasoning that they're trying to apply in this case.
Right.
Anything short of those extremes is not coercive And therefore, it's fine because, hey, the government has these sorts of informal transactions and negotiations all the time with the private sector. Yeah, not with you and not with me, but with people that they're interested in, be they, you know, big business people that they can, you know, shake down for money, or in this case, obviously big tech, in whose interest it apparently is to align themselves with the deep state so that they don't get smacked down by the IRS or the federal court system.
Let's talk about Justice Brown Jackson's comments. How is she a U.S. Supreme Court justice? That doesn't, because she's saying that, isn't that the First Amendment's job is to hamstring the government? Isn't, because they, the Bill of Rights and the Constitution is there to restrict the government. She completely misunderstands the point of the First Amendment, or am I misunderstanding something?
Well, no. I mean, you know, as to your first question, it's a very, very simple answer. She is the appointee of President Biden and his radical left minions. Of course, she's going to be essentially a communist. That's what she is. She's a radical left Marxist, and now she's ensconced in the Supreme Court, along with her comrade at arms, Sonia Sotomayor, from an earlier radical left administration. You know, so, of course, from now, I mean, you know, long gone are the days when we're going to get, you know, radical leftists who at least go through the motions of being semi-respectable and urbane. You know, they're just getting these absolute, you know, street Philistines now. That
she's openly,
she's one step removed from the bandana wearing, Antifa types. Quite frankly, in the ideology indistinguishable, just like these characters in Congress, you know, the so-called squad, which, by the way, is a very interesting term because squad is also used in phrases like, oh, I don't know, death squad and paramilitary squad. So the very choice of the term squad, I think, is suggestive as to their ultimate aims and perhaps modus operandi in the future.
There's one thing that one of the individuals or part of the plaintiffs were Children's Health Defense, or at least someone from them. And there was a rally before or around, the Supreme Court at the time. And it was doctors who've been censored and whatnot. But one thing that seems to be disappointing to a lot of people is that the supposition of the entire arguments and the conversations laid on this false premise that the vaccines were good, right? That the injections were good and that the elections were legitimate. Nobody ever pointed out, including the Solicitor General for Louisiana, at least in opening arguments or so, that even that itself caused harm. And maybe perhaps if they were to make that point, then they could say that they did cause harm because those were adverse effects, adverse harms. And that being that, you know, if the more information comes out, we're going to learn that the injection has indeed killed people. That and that alone, I think, should put the case on the side of the people there.
Yeah, put the burden. Yeah, I mean, it's again, this is nothing new. This is tantamount in our time to anyone who dared criticize Lincoln during the Civil War, anyone who dared criticize Wilson during World War I, anyone who dared criticize John Adams in his parlous times, you know, the very formative years, first years of the Republic, there's always an excuse. You know, this information is just too toxic and too dangerous. So this we're going to exclude. And don't you go there. Now you can talk about other things, you know, you have freedom of speech, but not this, because it threatens the very fabric of our society, of our government. And so therefore, you know, we're
would
going
you
to
say it was that bad though? Because I mean, this kind of, I mean, there are,
no, I'm just saying that's their point of view. And so today, I mean, you know, we're technically still at peace, but the COVID pandemic is the most critical event of our time.
Right.
It, you know, it completely turned the world upside down. We still really haven't established full accountability for what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, there are a lot of people out there in very powerful positions in the U.S., in Europe, in China, of course, who have a very strong vested interest in making sure that the truth of the matter never gets out, both as to the, you know, the etiology and origin of the pandemic itself, and of course the effects of these various vaccines. So all of this is probably the number one issue where great powers are at stake.
Yeah,
the very credibility of the government, read the deep state, hangs in the balance.
Yeah.
So of course they're not going to let it go. And they're going to carve out an exception, and they're going to do everything they can to censor it, and if necessary, jail people.
Yeah.
You know, as we saw with that lawyer that we talked about. You know,
yeah. That, yeah. Lambert.
Well, actually,
that was on the election.
Sorry, that was on the election, which is another issue.
Those two issues are
similarly pivotal, right?
Yes. So, yeah. I mean, the vaccine issue, the injection, COVID, they're still censoring. I shared a post of Ron Johnson's What Are They Hiding hearing that he held 2-3 weeks ago. We played clips from it.
I mean, you shared it on Facebook.
I shared it on Facebook. Yes. And some people had grabbed it. They shared it for me. It's not a lot because the algorithms already suppress anything like that. But anyway, so people started sending my brother sent me a text, and then my mother-in-law told me the same thing. She's like, well, I got flagged and whatnot. And then I got a notification for, you know, they took it down and they told me, you know, this is a violation, but, you know, stop it. And you can go on and you can continue to operate on our platform. They're still doing that. But again, I think I go back to my point in the last segment, and that is that the cat is out of the bag on the injections.
Well, I mean, and just more broadly speaking, the issue of censorship, the real priorities of the left are plainly observable in the fact that they've managed to torture the notion of free speech into this anything goes free expression. It's not just free speech protected, but now it's free expression. And that includes pornography. You know, and where pornography and obscenity are concerned, there are almost no limits. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll defend anything.
Yeah, right.
But where political speech is concerned, suddenly, well, we need to pick and choose.
Unfavorable.
Unfavorable political speech. And if anything, you know, the First Amendment applies first and foremost to political speech.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Steve. After this, Wisconsin State Legislator Ty Bond joins us to discuss if Wisconsin will be ready for the 2024 election.
In 1988, the John Birch Society produced a documentary so predictive, it's as though they had a time machine. Out of Control, Immigration Invasion was produced and hosted by investigative reporter William F. Jasper and looks at the growing problem of unrestricted illegal immigration that, in 1988, already saw upwards of 10 to 20 million illegal aliens within the borders of the U.S. Unknown agents from around the world using the southern border as easy entry. Certainly, some are innocent families escaping hardship, but also certainly some are criminals, potentially terrorists. Is it not appropriate that there be some criteria for the entry of any sovereign nation? Why should the U.S. be different than Canada, Germany, Russia, Japan, or every other country on the planet? Out of Control, Immigration Invasion. Watch this time capsule of prescient wisdom at thenewamerican.com/out of control.
Hey folks, for a limited time only, we're offering 25% off select 2023 back issues of the New American Magazine. Whether you're a longtime reader or someone who just discovered our magazine, now is the perfect opportunity to snag some of our most popular issues at an incredible discount. Just visit shopjbs.org and use the promo code SPRING25 when you check out. It's that easy. Just remember to enter the code and you'll save big. Now, mark your calendars because this awesome promotion is only valid through March 24th. That's right. You have the rest of the week to stock up on your favorite back issues and enjoy the perks of reading the truth behind the news. So visit shopjbs.org, browse our selection, and start saving a day. So Wisconsin State Legislator Ty Bond represents District 59 in one of the most politically significant states in the union. He joins us now to discuss a number of important developments in the dairy state. Ty, thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Paul.
Yeah.
Great to be here.
Yeah, I mean, I should probably tell folks, you also work here and you work on the legislative alert team. You do a tremendous job. You're a great researcher. But you and I talk in the halls here and there. And so it was only a matter of time before we get you out here to discuss what's happening in Wisconsin. Of course, we have such a crucial election coming up, and Wisconsin's a big deal in that. So let's talk about elections. I know that I believe there was a state Supreme Court ruling that got rid of the ballot boxes, but there's an attempt by the left to get them back in. What's going on with that?
Correct. In July of 2022, the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled that drop boxes were illegal in the state. They said state law does not permit drop boxes.
You mean illegal? They were illegal.
Yes. Yes, they said that they were illegal. The Supreme Court said that drop boxes could only pretty much be allowed in clerk's offices, and
yeah.
The only the only way that's only state lawmakers could make new policy regarding drop boxes. The Election Commission was the one that issued guidance in 2020 during the pandemic that would allow municipalities to have drop boxes. But thankfully, and yeah, in Teigen versus the Wisconsin Elections Commission in 2022, they made it so that those unauthorized drop boxes were illegal. So that was good.
That was good. That's the end of the story, right?
No, I wish. That'd be great. But the Wisconsin Supreme Court recently, earlier this month, they agreed to hear the challenge to absentee drop boxes in Wisconsin again.
Yeah.
The difference now is that we have a leftist Supreme Court, a liberal majority with Janet Protasiewicz taking over on the bench this last year.
Mm.
And there was a lawsuit filed pretty much shortly
after
filing
Who's behind this? Do we know the organization?
Yeah, there was an organization. There was a lawsuit was filed in July by Elias Law Group on behalf of two liberal leaning organizations, and a Dane County individual, which Dane County is where Madison is.
Yeah,
so
big surprise.
They are going to probably make a ruling on that. I do not see that going in the conservatives' favor, which is not good. So that's where we need individuals to step up. And hopefully our local municipalities, our local counties, the political subdivisions, as many as possible, can enact ordinances prohibiting them.
Ah, right.
So if that happens, I'm sure we'll see drop boxes in maybe Brown County, Milwaukee, Dane County.
Mm.
That's where I'm hoping patriots and people that care about election integrity will go out and man those and observe those drop boxes
if they can't get the local ordinances to ban them.
Correct.
And so that's somewhat hopeful, because even though the state may allow it, it still comes down at a local level where I guess county or city, they can say, even though we're allowed to have them, we are prohibiting those.
Correct. I hope there's an appeal higher office, because it's not in state statute. So
yeah,
the court's supposed to just interpret law as is, not create their own laws.
Yeah.
So we don't need this mega legislature of the Supreme Court. They're not the ones that are supposed to be making policy.
Yeah,
it's the legislature. So if we can go in, if they do enact this, hopefully we can appeal to a higher court. And if not, I'm hoping we can have a lot of people stand up and man these drop boxes 24/7.
Now, what's the timing looking like? It's already in the court, I suppose, but it hasn't been heard. Is there any chance that this won't be heard until after November, or likely not?
Likely not. From what I hear, and it's not positive, that this could be even done before the August primaries in Wisconsin. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Now let's talk about redistricting. This was something that we were eyeing. We knew that with Protasiewicz getting elected. Now, Democrats, even before that, have been trying to get the maps changed. I'm no fan of Democrats, but I got to say, the old maps, you look at some of them, everyone gerrymanders. I mean, if that's what you want to call it.
Everyone gerrymanders, and it's really, it's too bad. Wisconsin was at a point where Ron Johnson won, but Governor Evers
barely
won. Two different parties.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, both barely, either way. I think the Wisconsin legislature was very lopsided.
Yeah.
But they were ruled, the current maps that are in place right now, that all the representatives are elected in at right now, was ruled constitutional by the state and U.S. Supreme Court. So this is just very activist judging, again, at the state Supreme Court level with Janet Protasiewicz. So it's too bad that the maps had to change. The Wisconsin legislature will still probably be in Republican control after the next election in both chambers. Not sure about the Senate in 4 years from now, 6 years from now. We're not sure how that'll go.
Yeah.
But
it's not as bad as it could have been.
It could have been worse. Yeah, it could have been worse. The lawsuit came out on the maps. The ruling came out right before Christmas this past year.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court hired two consultants to make their opinions on maps, and anyone that was listed in the lawsuit was able, if they wanted to submit a map that they thought the consultants in the court should adopt. These consultants basically said the two conservative drawn maps were garbage. They threw them out right away. The reason they all of a sudden thought these maps were unconstitutional is because there were these municipal islands that were created. It would take a long time to get into, but That was actually a change of opinion from 2020 to until this year. That changed. But these consultants said, yep, there are four liberal maps that are acceptable.
Choose one.
Yep, choose one. The legislator decided to enact Governor Evers' map because it wasn't really good for Democrats. So it was kind of surprising that not a single Democrat, one Democrat only in each chamber voted for it. The rest of the Democrats did not support it.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. It was very interesting. I don't think
a stroke of good fortune, huh? In a way, maybe?
Kind of. You got, I guess, more fair maps in, I say that in quotations. But the Democrats still weren't happy with them because I think they thought that they had these ideal maps that were going to be handed to them by the court.
Do they think they underplay their hand in this?
A little bit. Yeah. And you know what? Maybe that's how it's supposed to be. Maybe.
Yeah.
I think just either party, when they're in control, no matter what state, they're just gluttons for punishment and lustful with power that they just need to do everything they can to keep that power.
And speaking of that, I know we only have a minute and a half, but tell me what you can about, we're looking at a possible recall of Speaker Voss. Now, Voss has been in constitutionalist circles, been labeled as a rhino, a neocon, all that stuff. He stood in as an obstacle toward a lot of great or progress for Republicans anyway. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's something I really haven't really been following too much. It's like a hot topic in the state.
It is.
By us, up by me, it's not something that comes up too much too often. I know that the recall effort, I had some issues with the initial recall when they first said they were going to file it.
Uh-huh.
I had some initial concerns about the process and how it'd play out.
Yeah. You weren't a fan of it?
Generally not, because I knew, I just based on some other things I know, I don't think it was a smart move. But apparently it got confusing because there were a bunch of maps that, or a bunch of signatures that were thrown out that weren't deemed valid. There were signatures from people on these up in the county just next to where I live. So
recall signatures. Yeah. So it's not even suspect.
So
huh?
I don't think they got the signatures. I don't think there'll be a recall. But all of us are up for reelection again this August and then in November. And I'm sure a lot of people have challengers. So we'll see what happens there. But
thank you, Ty. Ty Botten, Wisconsin State Legislator. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in to the New American Daily. Remember to visit thenewamerican.com for more truth behind the news. And we'll see you tomorrow.